Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
On December 17, 2014, when the U.S. and Cuba announced they would reestablish diplomatic relations, no one was less surprised than Tom Hayden, who had already set out to assess the historical lead-up to normalization in a new book. Hayden's access and personal history put him in a unique position to offer insight on U.S.-Cuban relations historically and post-normalization. The new book, Listen, Yankee, Why Cuba Matters, is an account of Cuban politics from a longtime observer of Cuba, and Hayden's memoir as a U.S. revolutionary student leader and founder of SDS, whose efforts to mobilize political change in the U.S. mirrored the transformation simultaneously going on in Cuba. The book is based in part on conversations between Hayden and Ricardo Alarcón, a top leader of the Cuban Revolution, foreign minister, and UN representative. Again, the name of the book is Listen, Yankee, Why Cuba Matters, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Tom Hayden to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Give us an idea of what it was about your conversations with Ricardo Alarcón, as well as this really huge announcement in December of last year that led you to put this together and to give us some background and some common ground so that we could more fully understand what is going on between Cuba and the U.S.
Well, it's a good time for the book to be coming out because of the December agreement between Presidents Obama and Castro. And lots of New Yorkers, lots of people across the country have gone to Cuba, and I would urge and support the idea that Americans go and see the island for themselves and realize that a long embargo is gradually being lifted. It's, as the president said, made little sense to keep doing the same thing, which has failed for 55 years, and I got interested in the book because a sort of legacy requirement, it seemed to me, that Cuba was so important in the 1960s to Latin America, to North America, to the world, for all sorts of reasons. It's been forgotten of late how important it's been, and it seems to me very crucial to get it straight and to simplify the relationship and finally move towards diplomatic recognition and normalization. And I think it's a very important step for President Obama's foreign policy.
You write this book as an observer of Cuba, also as a U.S. revolutionary student leader. You're telling your own story here. You're talking about your efforts to mobilize political change in the U.S. and how those efforts mirrored the transformation that simultaneously was going on in Cuba.
Yes. You know, when my publisher, Seven Stories, wanted me to do the book, I had said I thought it should be based on a dialogue with Ricardo Alarcón, who was also a revolutionary student leader in Havana, who went on to serve at very high levels of the Cuban government, foreign ministry, UN representative, president of the National Assembly, until he recently retired. It would be two old guys talking, as I said in one chapter. And the publisher said, well, it has to be more about you because nobody here knows Ricardo Alarcón. And that impelled me even more because it's kind of shockingly true that I'm like a minor figure on the political landscape here. And Ricardo Alarcón was one of the top several leaders of a country for 50 years on our border. And it's true, nobody knows him. So I hope to introduce his thinking and his reflections, not simply my own, as we go forward.
What do you think we can learn from Ricardo Alarcón as far as the subtitle of the book indicates, why Cuba matters to us, especially at this time?
Well, as a matter of national self-interest on the United States' part, I think people are probably aware that we're very badly isolated in Central and Latin America because of our long association with dictatorships and, you know, preoccupation with trying to keep the Soviet Union out, claim it's our backyard, continue the Monroe Doctrine, and so on. And at this point in world history, nothing could be more important than recognizing that our Americas, the geography, the cultures, the interconnectedness of our continent is very, very important when you see what the rest of the world looks like. And the way to a better relationship with the Latin Americans is through Cuba, because our embargo, our attempt to strangle Cuba for so long has unified all of Latin America behind Cuba. And there's a summit coming up in February, I believe, in Panama, where I think Raul Castro and Barack Obama will share space. And that could be a breath of energy towards a better relationship at a time when we're obsessed with immigrant rights issues inside the country. Most of those immigrants, not all, of course, but most of them are from Latin America. There'll be a joining of the domestic issue of immigrant rights and the external issue of restoring a good neighbor policy that I think would be very beneficial.
You write in the book that in 2006, Ricardo Alarcón invited you to Havana for a week, and you were talking about the American New Left. And the title of the chapter is A New Model in Our Americas. And you ask him and you talk about the belief in greater democracy in Cuba. And you're having that conversation now and in reflection to that visit in 2006. And with this recent news, what do you think the possibility is for greater democracy in Cuba now?
Well, I've long believed that a policy that threatens Cuba by covert operations or military force, which has been our policy for so long under so many presidents, is sure to consolidate the regime and increase its military alertness and defenses and consolidate the population. If you remove the threat of an enemy, people will be much more free to speak their mind and to, although they're quite free to speak their mind in most cases, and to put resources into their schools and into their healthcare system, into agriculture, and democracy will be enhanced. I know there are other people, Ted Cruz being one of them, Robert Menendez being another in the U.S. Senate, who think that if we travel to Cuba and spend money there, it's subsidizing a dictatorship. And they think by strangling that regime and preventing, you know, any dollars flowing there, somehow it will come down. There'll be some kind of insurrection, civil wars. Castro will be overthrown. So that's the debate, and I think we've broken through, and I think that, you know, there's a million Canadians that go every year, a million Europeans, 100,000 U.S. citizens, and 450,000 Cuban Americans or Americans of Cuban origin travel there, and that's the process around the dinner tables and in the coffee shops where democratic discussion is most useful and has the greatest impact.
Just looking at the title, toward the end of the book, you explain that C. Wright Mills's exhortation, "Listen, Yankee," that this was a complaint that Cubans could not receive a fair hearing as long as U.S. officials assume themselves superior in the relationship. Do you think we're getting over that?
I think it's built into us in a way. But this breakthrough is hopeful. I mean, we're a more powerful country by nearly every measure, and with that power comes a sense of superiority. And when you have that sense of superiority, it's hard to listen to others and respect others' viewpoints. That's all I meant. And listening to the Cuban complaint doesn't mean you necessarily have to agree with everything the Cubans
sure.
say.
Right.
It simply means listening instead of trying to find ways to subvert them or overthrow them. And they have a lot to say. You know, they have, despite the embargo and despite being in a state of siege, they have a lifespan that's equivalent to or longer than ours. They have better health care in many respects. They produce the best athletes in many arenas of the world. Take a look at the Cuban baseball players. They go on humanitarian missions, send doctors to Haiti to fight cholera, to Africa to fight Ebola. They're held in high regard around the world, not as a perfect model by any means, but they're held in high regard, and it's totally abnormal on our part not to listen to them and figure out what they've accomplished and what we can do together. That's what's meant by Mill's quote.
Well, the name of the book is Listen, Yankee, Why Cuba Matters. And so just with that quote, I am interested as we close out our conversation of where your optimism lies now.
All things considered, this is a pretty remarkable agreement. I mean, it's no accident that it took 55 years. There are very, very strong forces against it. When I started having the intuition that normalization was coming a couple of years ago, you know, people on the left told me, no, you know, the United States will never accept Cuba. And people on the right, especially in Congress, said they were certain that they had a monopoly, like Senator Menendez and Rubio and the rest of them, that they had control of Congress such that it would never be permitted. And I started to have my own doubts while I was researching and writing and interviewing people. But lo and behold, it became true. So that might make me a little giddy. I don't know about optimistic. There's a ways to go. But they are going to recognize each other. There will be debates in Congress. There will be opposition in Congress. But look, it's going to be easier than ever to travel to Cuba. You will be able to use a credit card in Cuba. Obama has sort of promised to take Cuba off the list of state-sponsored terrorism, which prevents international banks and lending institutions from lending to Cuba. More and more people will travel. And we'll see about the summit in Panama, but I think there will be a steady, not integration, but a steady thaw and improvement in the relationship. And one last thought. You know, a lot of people have a problem, myself included, with a one-party state that's been headed by one man for 50 years. It's no way that's a model that would come out of the 60s generation that I think of. But that is what Cuba is. On the other hand, I've hardly ever met an American who visited for tourist reasons, and thousands of them I've met, who doesn't come back and say, there's something great about that place. I love that place. They're very nice to us. It's very pleasant. And somehow we'll have to figure out why it is that a supposed dictatorial regime has still produced a country that's had so many accomplishments and whose people are so warm and great music and culture. The two don't go together. So our perceptions have to change. And that'll only happen, I think, by travel.
Will, the book is fascinating and very informed. It's Listen, Yankee, Why Cuba Matters. It is published by Seven Stories. Tom Hayden, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for spending time with us.
Thank you kindly. Bye-bye.
Very nice. Thank you. Again, the title of the book, Listen, Yankee, Why Cuba Matters by Tom Hayden. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.